Let me welcome you in new episode of Coffee with Developer. Now we have really good guest from the GitHub company. Elaine, welcome.
Thank
here. You know, so your company was one of or first company which introduced AI pair programming tool in the market. By the way, you catch our heart in Deutsche Telekom, and you were the first AI tool which helps developers to make code better. Mm-hmm. And we have right now almost 3,000 developers using this tool in our company. So thank you
thank for you. That.
It's already helping. So how you see from inside from the GitHub that companies are adopting these tools and
As you said, we were the first one to basically bring to everybody an AI product. Just up to 2021, when we released Copilot, AI was more of like a niche, and we were the first mainstream application of AI in the world. And so during the 4 years that we've been, seeing the market and seeing people evolving around AI, we've seen a pretty systematic patterns within organization where you see people trying it and like adopting Copilot on their own, like in a not necessarily in a corporate way. Like we've seen a lot of people using Copilot before their company were giving them access to the license. Like
it was also our case.
Yeah, a lot of companies were not happy about that, but that happened pretty quickly. But nowadays it's more organized, and what we see that you have the early adopters, the enthusiasts, what we call the AI strategists, who have been embracing Copilot and AI. And it's probably like 20-30% of your development team. Then you have another wave of people who needs a little bit of help. Like they need to be shown what great looks like, to be shown some good use cases, like to be shown like how that could help them personally in their day-to-day activities. And if you enable these people, you probably can have like 50% to 60% of your development team using AI. And then you need to really work hard for the rest, because still have the skeptics.
We are still early adopters and then followers, for sure.
And so you need more help for the other ones. But it's been consistent from one company to another.
The audience which is here already also heard the speech which you have, and I would like to build on that. And actually it's also my view to the problematic that the tools like Copilot and then also Copilot agent, coding agent tool, it seems like another abstraction layer upon the programming languages. So we already like seen the history several like ages, like we have assembly, we have functional programming, objective oriented programming, then frameworks and another abstraction layers. This seems like really similar. How you are looking on it in GitHub?
Yeah, so it's definitely funny that we're going to have more and more code, but we're going to write less and less code. So it's kind of a weird paradox here. So with the fact that we are writing less and less code, then the user friendliness of that code becomes less important, right? Because if I'm not reviewing that code, like if a human being is not looking at that code anymore, like does it need to be so like high level, almost like business level anymore? Or could we get something much more efficient and much more like, close to the machine and stuff like this? So I think we're going to see some evolutions over there. It's not the case yet. Like right now, LLMs are generating the languages and the codes that we are using already. But in an agentic world where things are being generated and tested and compiled and all that things are happening with very little human intervention, maybe we don't need that step. Maybe we don't need that intermediate step. Maybe you could have LLMs generating binary code right away and deploying that automatically. Maybe.
Maybe.
We'll see.
So maybe I can show here if we are speaking about this picture. Yeah. So
yeah.
Where we have like team staffed by the AI agent, and I would like to also for understanding the difference between GitHub Copilot as a pair programming tool, which you can have in the IDE, and then GitHub coding agent, where you can also like staff your team with those agents, focusing to the like concrete task, then you can in the end paralyze the work, and increase even productivity of the teams working on the issue. And what you are seeing on this picture is like just small dots where the humans are. So how do you see the development of those agentic approaches and let them more code produced by the AI instead of the people, and also, of course, elaboration on that what if something goes wrong and somebody need to fix it? What is code quality? How you are tackling those problems, and how you are seeing that it will evolve?
So what we're seeing in that picture for me is really the shift between single player mode and multiplayer mode. So we're going to move from a place where, as a developer, I'm interacting with my IDE and I'm driving things in isolation from everything else that's happening, and that I'm using it one way and other people are using it in a different way. And it's not at the team level. What we want to do is to move to a team approach of managing AI. And so having like shared best practices, shared processes, shared way of using it, but also making sure that it happens in the background. So I'm not looking at the agent doing something on my IDE. It's doing something in the background and I can move on and do something else. And so lots of things are happening. And as you said, it becomes critical to be able to handle that volume of activity, whether it's for a testing point of view, but also like making sure that the quality is good. So for that, obviously, humans are still in the loop. Like humans are still making the last decision about whether to agree on something or to release something. But what we want to do is to mix basically the AI approach and some traditional technologies that we have, which are more deterministic. And quality is one of these. With quality, with security, we have some very good technologies that allows us to know exactly whether there's a problem or not. And it's not a 95% good or 95% secure. It's black or white. So mixing these two approaches, we think that is the key to add that volume of things generated, but also making that level of confidence that we're going to deliver the right thing to in the stable and secure things to
maybe
our customers.
If you would like to be more like more closer to the software engineer, so can I phrase it, and please fix me if I am wrong.
Yeah.
So for example, you need to define your standards of the quality, which you can incorporate, for example, in GitHub Actions, and also to your like branches and workflows in the branches, for example, like code review. So right now we were seeing that you can build code review agent, which could review the code and could make review faster, but then your like qualitative point of view could be that also human need to be in the review loop. Yeah, for example, and this is up to the companies how they set up those workflows. So I'm getting it right? That
Yes. So you always have to define what your quality standards are, what your best practices are, but also you will need to define the surrounding of what's going on in that AI workflow. So you need to make sure that when you have all these agents executing your code in the background, what you define a security layer around that, so that agents are not going to reach out to some endpoint somewhere on the planet and send some information from you. So you need to, as a software engineer, you are still responsible for that chain.
Yeah.
And that's where I like to say that you are engineering some software, you're not writing code anymore. It's a different thing. And it's more important to engineer some software than to just write some code. All these activities are part of the software engineering process. Code is just one of them. And you're still responsible for that food chain.
Yeah, we saw in this picture that, of course, that we are not right now speaking about just code, but the whole SDLC.
And absolutely.
Not just writing of the code. And this is like changes of the products from this agent words or from the copilot, which is in the IDE lying on your computer. Mm. And then agent, which is sitting somewhere on the cloud.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. Fine. Then something in nature will come, next nature question would be, imagine that fine, we like right now we'll produce less code. So the obvious question is, are we going to be more lazy as coders? And then of course we already start hearing some question about skill atrophy for the developers. Yeah. And also like, fine, how about the new generation of the software engineers? Yeah? So if this generation of the software engineers will like go to retirement, then who will teach new generation? If you know, so it's like more. I know that it's not actually the problem of the toolset and an approach which you are which you are delivering with the GitHub, but still, this is something which the companies are like have problem to understand or maybe tackle. So I would like to hear your opinion on that.
I mean, there are several things here. First of all, are developers going to be more lazy? I don't think we can be more lazy than what we are now. Because if you are a good software developer, you're very lazy. Like, that's the point of being a software developer, is to make the machine work for you and to do that in the smartest way. So that's a goal. That's a goal, to be lazy as a software developer, I think. So I'm not very concerned about that. But what you're saying about like generation and like new trends, so it's going to be interesting. So first of all, I think it's already there. Like, you know, you and I, when we started developing, we had a book, there was no internet. Like, we were looking at the function in the book, and if it was not in the book, it didn't exist, basically. And then 10 years later, nobody had a book anymore. Like, everybody was looking on the internet. Were developers more lazy because they were looking on the internet as opposed to a book? Not really, right? And was it bad? Well, like some people were saying, like, oh, hey, what happened if there is no internet? Well, if there is no internet, we have bigger problems than just, you know, figuring out where the function is. And so it's just the next stage, right? The internet doesn't matter anymore. It's basically, you're not looking on a web page. You're looking at what LLM is generating now. So it's different. And students today, like if you are, you know, graduating from school this year, you probably started learning to code with Copilot. Copilot was a given then when you started. So it's already there. But at the same time, what it brings, like, think about all the COBOL code we still have. Like, how many people can make sense of that code anymore? Not that much. But using AI, we are able to go back to that code and start, you know, generating some documentation, like understanding what it does, maybe translating that to something else. Something that we've lost, we're getting it back with AI. So maybe we're going to lose a little bit about, you know, Java and JS and C#, but we're getting on the COBOL side of things. So there's going to be like a balance of knowledge of all, like, you know less about, in terms of depth, about one language, but you have a broader access to many more technologies. So it's going to change. It's not going to be worse or better. It's going to be different. And we're going to write probably less code, but we're going to have more code.
Mm-hmm. This is clear. Yeah? So next question would be like, we already seeing new wording or new terms popping up, like vibe coding and all this platform like Bolt or I do not remember what next one is. So those vibe coding platforms where you just can write a prompt and it's everything created instead of you. What is the biggest differences and what is your value proposition in that case that the this GitHub coding agent is doing something similar, but not similar.
Yeah. So there are different different tool sets for different activities or different people. So like you mentioned a couple of vendors, but yeah, Copilot coding agent would be great to address an existing code base. Some software, like in an enterprise setup, basically the software we're dealing with on a day-to-day base has probably been started 5 years ago, maybe 10 years, sometimes 20 years ago. We don't have that many new applications that we start from scratch. So we need to have that, you know, existing environment that we need to deal with. And vibe coding is not really where that fits, really. But we have, you know, another approach with Copilot Spark is another technology that fits in that environment, where basically it's not about adopting your stacks, it's about proposing a full stack already baked in the product that goes from the frameworks all the way to the deployment environment, where somebody who has no knowledge about coding could get to a working app that's running online and it does everything for you. So it's about, I mean, the value of that is offering to more people the ability to be application creators.
For sure. And this is a really nice example of this abstraction. So right now, also business people who are domain experts are able to write applications, which previously were not able because they need to know how to code and they need to wait for the developers till they will have time or prioritize their task that they will execute on that one. Yeah. Very nice.
But we still need to remind people that this application needs to be secured and backed up and managed.
For sure.
And we don't want to reinvent, you know, I don't know if you remember the Lotus notes or like, you know, all these access databases that were popping up everywhere and, you know, created some catastrophes.
By the way, it's also like very visible that all this new abstraction layer just bring more developers to the or more people who are able to create the application, not less.
Yeah, and that's one of the goals of GitHub, basically. It's always been to welcome more developers and to grow the development community. And we've been doing that over the years. I mean, when I started at GitHub, we had like 1 million developers, and now we are up to 100 million developers because we've switched to being developer is a job to developing is an activity. And like your kids probably doing Minecraft and some, you know, coding around that. And there's so many ways of being a developer nowadays that it's one of them as, you know, a new one.
So you are also in a CTO position in the GitHub. Mm-hmm. And in this position, I think that you also need to somehow measure performance of your teams, how well they perform, to not punish them or do but then see what they can do better. But then if you will have agents in the teams, how you are measuring the performance of those teams which are working with the agents or full agents teams. Yeah. So
at GitHub, we're not measuring teams, we're measuring experience and outcomes.
Okay.
So whether there are agents in the loop or not, we're looking at, you know, where are the bottlenecks and how can we make that faster? Making that faster means probably changing the tools that people are using to remove these bottlenecks and make, you know, the delivery faster. So like, for instance, we've invested millions and millions like every year, making sure that our CI/CD platform is the best. Like we're measuring basically the time it takes for a developer to get a feedback from CI/CD and making sure that the feedback loop is as short as possible. Like we strive to get something between 8 to 12 minutes as a feedback. Like whenever I'm pushing a commit to a pull request, I need to have that feedback quickly. Likewise, how long does it take to deploy to production? Because we test in production at GitHub. Like that's, you know, our test environment is your machine. I'm sorry about that, but no, joking. But yeah, we push in production to make sure that it's going to work, and we use feature flags and stuff like this. So so there are, it gives us basically many knobs where we can you know, improve the velocity of our teams. And it's the maximum productivity is not necessarily in the human beings. It's in the process that For it sure. takes to push something to produce many other scale that we have at GitHub. So we do evaluate that a lot, and we do survey a lot our developers so that they can tell us what their frustrations, like where did they lose sometimes, what we could improve. So it's a lot about listening to what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. But then we also looking at, you know, hard metrics as well, and seeing what we can improve. But it's really like a lot of interaction with people to understand how we can help them best.
You know, so I was also in your today presentation, and you show a really nice picture where it was like the best or the most, not best, but the most contributor.
The most commits.
Commits.
Yeah.
In your GitHub repo in GitHub is actually a coding agent.
Absolutely.
And this was like leading me to this question. So if it's the most contributor, then probably also you need to check some like how it's increase your like productivity, how many bugs you need to solve if the coding agents are involved. Mm-hmm. So this is in my intention to like get from you. So if you have some experience with that.
That's something we're looking at, definitely. It's hard to, you know, it's not like we are producing cars and like, you know, every car is the same. And like, you're sure that if you have 10 more cars at the end of the week, you've done something better, because like a feature is never the same than the other one.
For sure. You know,
like we always talk about software factories, but at the end of the day, the factory is really like the compilation of the code. That's the only thing that we can reproduce really. But the creation side of things is not something that's, you know, measurable in units of time or whatever, and like not in a reliable way anyway. So it's kind of hard to say like we are definitely better, or like we have definitely more efficiencies in things like this. That's why a lot of things that we're doing are based on surveys and like sentiment from developers, and which is very important, because the happier people are, the more productive they are at the end of the day. But yeah, so we're trying to have that correlation, but it's still quite hard. Like measurement in software, it's a lot harder than AI, actually.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe just last question to this measurement. So, you know, this meme which is on the internet, so who we are, CEOs, what we want, AI, you know, all these funny things. But then it's always, I experience the same, because I'm also responsible in our company to the scaling of AI. And there's always like a question, so what is the like return of investment if we are using the AI? I know your report from the GitHub Copilot, because I'm working with that. But how you are measuring this return of, you know, you're selling those products, but this slide where you show that GitHub Copilot agent is the most contributor, it's a real nice example that you're eating your own food.
Yeah, absolutely.
So are you also in that phase that you need to answer the question of your CIOs, like, okay, so what is the return of the investment if we are using and those tools?
Yeah, so I mean, there's been many, many different ways, different studies, different evaluations of the outcome of AI. Some people have looked at, you know, number of pull requests. Some people have looked at sentiment. Like, they have asked the developers, how many hours do you think you've saved during the week? There's been many, many different things, and all of them came out with some number, like 10%, 15%, 20%.
For sure. New buzzword is lines of the code added to the repository.
Yeah, number of lines of, number of suggestions, you know, you name it. The one thing is that whatever that number, there's always like, even if you find the, like, if you say 5% of the development time, you know, so the coding time of a developer per week, even that 5% number, which seems to be, you know, underestimated, it's still a positive ROI compared to the price it costs. Is that right? So it's very easy to have that conversation about ROI, because like the price of Copilot, it's basically an hour of your developer. Like if we save an hour a week,
then you're in positive case.
It's positive already. But I mean, we don't want to just be saving 1 hour a week. We want to do more, right? So there are many, like we're trying to look at many angles to bring some measurements. The goal is not necessarily to evaluate the ROI, but mainly evaluate the evolution of the usage. So like that ROI discussion, that's things we had mainly like 2 years ago, I would say, like when it was, you know, nascent, like new thing. People wanted to know whether they were spending money wisely. That not everybody is pretty much, you know, agreeing that yes, there is value in that. Now the next phase is to say, okay, if there is value in that, then I need my developers to use more of it. So who are the ones using it more than the other ones? And it's not about using these measures to evaluate the people. It's more like figuring it, where do I need to invest to bring more education or to bring more help or like, you know, demonstrate more use cases so that these people are embracing that. It's also, and we have many customers doing that, it's also a way to find out who are the best ones so that they can teach the other ones, because the best is to have one of your colleagues and not me to teach you. Like you will trust one of your colleagues more than me. So yeah, finding who are the best so that they can explain to the other ones the use cases they implemented. That's also a very, very positive way of looking at it.
And maybe last question would be from my side, we have many people which even didn't start using tools like Copilot. So imagine you are maybe a young student right now in the university, and you have GitHub account and you have GitHub Copilot. What would be your first steps and to just digest how it could help you, how it could help you, like for example, to become entrepreneur, or how it can help you to be better software engineer. So they should decide which direction they would like to go. But actually, I think that it could help. And now, like maybe, can you explain me like first steps which they should take?
Well, first of all, I think that it's a great tool to learn how to code. Because whenever, like one of the feature I like the most when I'm looking at something that I don't really understand is to just select it and say, explain. And that explanation, when you're not too sure, like you're a beginner in coding, having that explanation, having that like senior person next to you, like telling you like this code is doing that, and you know, that kind of stuff is a great evolution. And a lot of people have been learning how to code and how to become like real coder by, you know, being involved in an open source project and like trying to submit pull requests and stuff like this to other projects. And by doing that, they've interacted with more senior people, but it's kind of scary, like to submit a pull request to like a mainstream open source project. And I'd like it to remain a little bit like something you take seriously. So having that help so that you know that like you understand better, but also you get that review from AI before you're submitting something to the rest of the world, it's a huge help, because it's a confidence booster. Like you've learned more, like you have a feedback, and you're not going to be judged, you know, by another human being. You're going to be judged by AI, and they're going to give you like an honest feedback, and you can improve. And whenever you're showing your work to the rest of the world, you are showing up, you know, with something that's more ready, already more prepared. So it opens some doors where you can start contributing to things that are much bigger. And I always also encourage people to use AI as a way to bounce ideas. So like, hey, how want you do that? What do you think of it? Like, what should I think about? You know, having that conversation, again, it's a safe space. Like nobody's judging you. Like you don't care about the opinion of Copilot on your personality. I hope you don't. But then it will give you some ideas. It will give you some suggestions. And then when you show up to the world, you're more equipped with you know, new thoughts. So yeah, so doing these things is, I think it's a huge confidence booster.
Mm-hmm. So Alan, hope that pronounced the name correctly.
It's fine.
Fine. Sorry for that. But I just would like to share one thought to the world, and it was very refreshing to meet you. So just for everybody to understand, Alan today did a really good speech in front of a main stage, then workshop. Even we have troubles with the Wi-Fi, but you will be able to help the people in the workshop with the coding task, with the and also holding this discussion here. And it's really, really refreshing to meet some big person on CTO level in the such big company like GitHub, and knows everything which is like bothering software engineers, and also are capable to present it to the audience and spread your knowledge. So very, very thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't know everything, but thank you.
For sure. And nobody knows everything. Just my wife knows everything. Okay. So again, thank you.
Thank you.
And for you, there is space. Also ask the question. So we have somewhere there microphone. And if you'd like to ask, like maybe we have time for two questions. So yeah, so.
Yes, thank you very much. I have a question, maybe it's wrong, but I will ask. Does it make sense to create for Deutsche Telekom something like additional layer of private copilot? Because they have a lot of knowledge, a lot of domain expertise, but it's private. So I guess that is like GitHub copilot is going to be general. But there is big value maybe inside of the Deutsche Telekom. Does it make sense for them to develop it?
It does make sense.
If it's okay, I would try to reply just that in Deutsche Telekom we are doing something which we called Telecontext. It's our internal MCP server which we can provide those knowledge to the GitHub Copilot, and then we can like benefit from this knowledge which we gathered through the years, and also which we are still building, and utilize GitHub Copilot to evaluate just everything which Copilot knows with our knowledge. So it's possible from our side, and we are doing it.
And that's definitely one way of doing it. So we've been looking at customization over the years. Like a couple of years ago, we tried with fine-tuning a model, and we realized that at the speed of the evolution of models, a fine-tuned model of one generation is useless compared to the off-the-shelf model from the next generation. So it's a problem we've been looking at, and it's not easy. But nowadays, what you can do also is to create custom agents. So it's not custom models, but custom agents where you make sure that this agent always have that basic contextual knowledge of the environment it's going to be responding to. So that's one way of doing it. MCPs is definitely one way, and it gives that real-time approach as well, because there is like the static context, but the real-time context is also super important. And then teams can create their own customization as well within their repository. So they can have custom instructions or like agents.md files where they're going to give specific instructions. And also, when you're looking at the agentic layer, there's going also to be like an execution environment that you'll be able to customize. And that's going to bring also some specific knowledge to the execution. So many different things. And definitely it's something where there's still a lot of things to be done.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry for that, but I was searching for, it's actually something which I found like just 2 days ago. You released the open source library for the spec-driven development called SpecKit.
Yeah.
It's published on GitHub, where actually this approach you can like pre-set up everything which you are doing with the Copilot agents in your project. So this is something which is also like seems like really good direction in the development of the tools which are using AI and helping developers to make a code. So spec-driven development, it will be something which will be also very interesting in the future.
Yeah,
I have one question. Thank you also for the presentation and for this session. How do you foresee the future of our UIs as we know them today, with all the MCPs, chatbots, and so on? Do you foresee that we will go with the standard UI interfaces on the desktop, on the mobile, or there will be something different?
Who?
Like, for example, when you open the Lovable, right? You get a text area and you just do the prompting, right? And then you mentioned, right, MCP is doing some actions in your company. I don't know, HR processes or expense processes or whatever, right?
So, I mean, it's definitely going to be a lot more multimodal. So we're seeing that with speech. Speech has been like tremendously improved over the years, like in terms of recognition, but also generation. So it's becoming more and more natural to interact with AI through speech. I mean, I'm still struggling with Siri, but Siri is not at the at the level of what we have now in the state of the art, you know, speech technology, unfortunately. But we can do so many things now with that. Vision also has been tremendously improved. Like you don't have to describe a picture anymore. You bring a picture to get another picture back, or like you get another format. So yeah, that does give a lot more opportunities for different interactions. We're seeing the glasses from Meta as well. Could be a good way of interacting with people, right? So I think that the touch points, you know, between technology and humans are going to be a lot more diverse than just, you know, a phone or a screen. We'll see, but yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.